Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach, KX93.5.
This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that the opinions expressed on any public affairs show do not reflect those of KX93.5, its management, or the board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5. Good morning. Welcome to Laguna Roundtable. I'm Ari Grayson. My co-host Jim Kennedy has the day off. I'd like to welcome my guests today, Christina and Jackson Adams and Christian Oyen. Christina is a writer and editor on topics including health, camel milk, autism, parenting, and more. And Jackson is a community college student here in Orange County, and he works in sales at an upscale clothing store. Today, we're going to be discussing autism and what it's like for a person living with autism and what it's like for the family. Also joining us, as I said, is Christian. Christian, I hadn't expected to have you here in the studio today, So you're an added bonus. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I am also a community college student at Saddleback, and I am also a musician. I have been playing music for, I want to say, 10 or more years, and I have various solo projects over the year. The most recent one is called Christian Club, and I'll have an EP out under that name next month.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. As I say, it was an unexpected pleasure that you were able to free up your schedule and join us. And you're actually going to regale us with a little bit of music during our show, aren't you?
Yeah. I've got a song on deck for you guys.
Okay, excellent. And just so everybody is aware, if you want to reach out to Christina, the best way to do so is through her website, which is ChristinaAdamsAuthor.com. And Christina is spelled with a C, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A, Adams, A-D-A-M-S, author, AUTHOR.com. So welcome to the show. You know, I want to just jump right into this. There are so many misconceptions and so many misunderstandings about autism. So I'd like to begin by asking you, Christina, what is autism for those who are familiar with the word but may not really know exactly what it entails?
Well, hello, Ari. It's so great to be with you today, and it's my pleasure to have these two fantastic young guys with me today in the studio. So first of all, what is autism? Autism to me is almost a term that has become sort of meaningless. I will say that autism is pretty much characterized by a few guiding principles. You might say that there's difficulties with social interaction is really one of the hallmarks of having autism or being on the autism spectrum. You might say that having very strong interests in a certain area or being really kind of, quote, into your own world is the phrase you might hear early on from people that are wondering if their child or a person they love is on the autism spectrum. Autism also sometimes comes with biomedical issues. There might be sensitivities to foods. There might be sensitivities to textures. There might be certain conditions that you can treat that are related to immune system dysfunction. So when we treat those in the autism world, we call that biomedical intervention. So luckily, if you do things right, a person that has autism spectrum, they can be super talented and gifted, and you want to access that by giving them the right education and the biomedical support that they deserve.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. And just out of curiosity, because it seems as though the rate is increasing constantly, what do we currently see as being the rate of occurrence of autism?
The official rate from the Centers for Disease Control, which is called the CDC, stands at 1 out of 88. However, they recently did, about a year ago, an upgraded study where they actually ask parents the right kinds of questions, which is, has a health professional or medical professional ever diagnosed your child with one of these conditions on the autism spectrum? So that actually turned out to be 1 out of every 45 U.S. children. Now, when I started this in 2000, when my son was diagnosed, it was still hovering around, oh, gosh, it was 1 in 10,000. Then it went to, oh, it's 1 in 2,500. And then it went to dropping, 1,500. It went to 1 out of 800. And now, here we are at one out of every 45 U.S. children. So that means 2% of our children are now on the autism spectrum in the United States.
That's actually a really staggering number, isn't it? It seems as though part of that might be due to the fact that it was seriously, seriously under-recognized. Certainly when we're talking about 1 in 10,000, I don't think there's been anything that's caused such a dramatic increase other than improved diagnoses.
Well, I wish I could agree with you on that, Ari, but I do not, and I'll tell you why. There are certainly instances where people that would have been called as, quote, mental retardation or intellectual disability, as we now call it, would have been given an autism diagnosis these days. But all the studies over the years have pretty much ruled that out. So it started with California years and years ago. There are certainly some of the people that fall in that criteria, but here's the way to know that the increase is real, other than the studies that I do keep up with. The fact is that the educational systems are bursting at the seams to deal with this. If we already had children that were called, you know, other conditions and they actually had autism, we would know it. We would have those classrooms. We would have those teachers. We don't. We're having to build more and more and more support systems in for people that are new, they are here, and they do have autism spectrum disorder.
Is there something in particular that we could attribute then this increase in the number of incidents?
There are many things that we can attribute it to. We don't have a ton of time today, so I'll just say that, first of all, people with autism have always been around, but not in this much of a number. And the increase is probably due to, in the largest part, I'll put it down to the increasing, I guess I would say, westernization of society. The more you have industrialized society, the more you have chemicals in the environment, the more you have pollution, the more you have what I call environmental factors, which right. can be anything from pollution to medical interventions to all kinds of things. Anything that is intruding into the natural system of a baby and a child that's outside of their body, those things tend to create rises. Like, let's take pollution. Any pollution sources tend to increase the rate of autism diagnoses nearby.
I'm not a medical doctor, but is what we're seeing actually similar then to, let's say, a Parkinson's, where you might have a genetic predisposition towards autism, but then an environmental factor intervenes and triggers
Yes,
that?
That's absolutely true. There are conditions that do predispose one to having an autism spectrum issue, and those can be anything like certain genetic factors. There's one that's called the MTHFR gene that may tend to give you certain characteristics that if you are kind of pushed over the brink in certain biomedical interventions early on or certain pollutants, things like that, that it can cause autism to become more prominent. There are a lot of things. So basically, yes, people with autism spectrum tendencies have always been around, but the increase that we're seeing in the rate of disability among our young people is real.
Well, certainly. You've been involved working with the autistic community for quite a number of years now.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the stereotypical behaviors or signs that a person might be on the autism spectrum? And at what age do we find people are able to identify autism as being present in their child?
Well, used to. It took quite a long time. No one wanted to give the diagnoses, first of all, because they thought they were rare. And second of all, they thought there was nothing you could do. So you could go to doctors, you could drag your child around, and you might wait until they were 8 years old, 10 years old before somebody would say it, or never. So around the year 2000, which was when my wonderful son sitting here with me was diagnosed, we were just at the cusp of the boom that was starting to happen among the young people. So I took him to a couple places. No one said, oh, no, he's fine. Oh, no. You know, my son bit people until he was 4 years old, because back then you certainly had some teeth, didn't you, my boy?
Yeah.
And he was almost three when we finally got it. But the doctors did not do it. They did not help. It was actually a person who was a behavioral aide and a preschool person. So if a preschool says you have an issue, you generally do. So at any rate, how do they get diagnosed? What age now? I'm happy to report that the age of diagnosis has dropped. There are 18-month-olds that are getting diagnosed. There are even a year old. If you know what to look at, you can see risk factors in a baby that generally involve motor skills. However, I will say among different communities that are disadvantaged or of color, the rate takes much longer to get diagnosed. The African-American community has always gotten later diagnoses. It's really, you know, economically unfair, as are most, you know, health conditions.
So what are the first signs that a parent should look for, especially in somebody as young as an 18-month-old infant? What are some of the things that a parent should be looking for in their child?
Well, here's something that you can look at originally when they're very young. Do they smile? Do they cuddle? Do they do things like that? Do they feel rigid in your arms? Then later, do they meet their milestones developmentally? They should be sitting up by around 6 months. They should be crawling, you know, between that kind of 8 to 12 month old. They should start walking around a year or later, but not too much later. But I think one of the big things is, do they seem to respond to stimulus a little different? Do they cry at things? Do they find certain things unpleasant other babies like? However, I will say, too, here's a big one. When they get a little bit older, do they wave? Do they point? Do they bring objects over to show you? Those are called joint attention behaviors,
right,
that you're attending to things the same. You're two different people, but you're attending to the same thing, and you're interacting to share it with each other. And a lot of children on the autism spectrum do not point, do not wave, do not nod their head yes or no. So they do have some differences early on.
Well, and I know that certainly in people who are just a little bit older, sometimes we find that they don't make eye contact. That's something that we see also absent in very young children as well.
Well, you can't get into this without the issue of regressive autism. Many of the children are doing fine, and then there's sometimes an incident that sets them back around each stage of their developmental trajectory. So, you know, there's children that are just kind of different from the get-go, and there are kids that later start to display the behaviors. So at every stage, it's different. Now, there is a book that I really love, and it's called Does Your Baby Have Autism? And it's written by some very good people who took all these tapes and all these data of young children that they had observed as babies, and they saw that they did not crawl the same way. They did not have the motor skills right, the same way. So you can actually therapeutically go back and create a crawling track and do all these things therapeutically to help the child, because we know now that motor skills are tied to autism spectrum disorder.
And we don't want parents to overreact. Every child develops at his or her own level and at own rate. But these are some of the things that we want to draw attention to and begin to see as perhaps one piece of the puzzle, not to allow it to just stand by itself and to become concerned if you have a friend whose child is also at about the same age as yours and they're already starting to crawl and engage in other typical behaviors for their age, and perhaps your child hasn't yet begun.
Yeah, it's nothing to, you know, here's the thing. Parents have an instinct, but it's hard. Like me, my family wasn't living here. It was my first child. I didn't have a lot of support, so I didn't know a lot of, you know, things that should be happening. But I will say my son was very bright. He was very advanced. He spoke at 9 months. No surprise once you're going to hear him speak in a little bit. And he was doing very well. He did regress. You know, we had to kind of pull them back, and luckily we've been able to do quite a bit on that front.
Well, and as you mentioned, your own son, Jackson, who's here with us today, and we're going to get a chance to hear him talk to us in just a couple of minutes. When did you first suspect that Jackson might have autism, and what were the first signs that you observed that led you to this diagnosis?
Well, I always knew he was a bright fellow because people would tell me that, teachers and things like that. And he was always the most beautiful guy, so what could you say? You know, you look at him and you're like, yeah, he's perfect, I know. But it was really kind of, he did a lot of biting after a while, so I guess he really didn't understand that that was really painful. He was just kind of got really hyper, didn't you, my friend? So he got really hyper, and he also did not want to sit in one place. There was a couple of preschools that said, okay, we like our children to nap, and your guy is not a napper, so you need to go. And so I think the getting booted out of a couple of preschools, that was difficult. And then, of course, one preschool teacher, she said, oh, I think your son has autism because mine does. And, of course, I was super angry, like, she just wants to say that because her son does. So, you know, I was very affronted. But then later when I realized, oh, this is really it, I said, I'm going to go anywhere. I'm going to do anything I can to get my son better. And that's the attitude that it takes.
Absolutely. You've got to be your child's own best advocate. If not you, then who else?
There's no one.
Absolutely. I'm Jackson. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Ari.
My pleasure. You know what? I often find that the general public tends to focus on challenges that people with autism have. But I think it would be nice for us today to begin by discussing some of the strengths and some of the abilities that we find in a person with autism. You know, as your mom said, you know, you were very intelligent as a young child, and people recognized and saw that in you. So now you're in college, as is our friend Christian. What are some of the strongest skills that you possess, not just in school, but generally in life?
Well, Ari, I'd like to say that I am very, very good at mediating problems. I usually take a neutral role when it comes to two people, like, say, friends I see arguing. I'm very slow to take a side. And then when I see them arguing, I usually ask what's going on. I don't just blame the one person. I listen to both people. And that's what I usually am. I take a systematic approach to everything. Like, that's a big strength of autism. We're very good with systems, activities, organization, executive functioning sometimes. Well, executive functioning can be on and off sometimes, like depending on what the person wants to do, because also we have a strong will. A lot of people with autism have very strong wills, and my mom would know that.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
But yeah, it's sometimes you just got to push, and once you get the push and you go another direction, your skills can help you. Like, sometimes they work against you in the beginning, but you got to find the strengths and put yourself in situations where the strengths can help you.
You know, I'm really pleased to hear and impressed by the fact that you are able to listen to different sides of an argument, but listen carefully before making up your mind, because that's something that we often find in somebody who is on the autism spectrum, is that they don't always have good social skills and they don't have empathetic skills. But from what you described, that's not something that you experience personally. It sounds like you're very strong in those areas.
Well, I am now, but I have had a few setbacks.
Okay.
Like before, I'd say seventh grade, I was pretty happy-go-lucky. I didn't care what most people thought, as most children are, and they should be innocent. But after it kind of hit me like a brick in seventh grade when I felt like I'm missing friends, to see all these other children happy and talking with their friends. And I felt that's pretty much when I realized what autism was and how I should try and overcome my problems. And I wanted friends for the first time. And now I have some, and that's great, because it took a lot of work, to be honest,
okay,
to overcome these issues. But I feel that once I reached that milestone, I feel I've become much more, say, neurotypical in that mindset. Because sometimes you just have to realize, it yourself, and you can't have other people just tell you.
Absolutely, and it's, you know, it's really interesting that you say this, because that self-awareness is also something which has helped you to be open to receiving treatment, to work on things, so that you do develop skills that may not come as naturally to you as they might say to another person your age. So I think that's terrific. I want to get Christian involved as well. Christian, thank you as well for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure, absolutely. So what are some of your greatest strengths and some of your greatest assets?
Well, something that I consider to be a strength for me, as for many other people with autism, is a penchant for creativity. I would definitely say that many of us are creative, and not in obvious ways. I mean, I'm an artist, but I would say that autistic people in STEM fields, anything of that sort, also use very creative approaches to the way that they do their jobs, solve problems, things of that nature. I think it's just, you know, autism is considered a neurodivergence. That, I believe more strongly than it being a disorder, is that it's just kind of a different way of thinking that modern society hasn't quite come to understand in a way that it can be helped.
Well, creativity certainly comes in different forms. And a lot of times, you know, when you're able to see things perhaps with a different lens than others might, that
right.
makes your music more interesting, because it's like, wow, you know what? He's expressing his ideas through a sound, through lyrics that I didn't think about.
Right.
And so I think that's what's kind of cool. That's what gives it that creative aspect, is that others don't see things necessarily the same way as Christina or I might, but that's okay. I mean, that's what adds to the richness of life.
Yeah, I would say that autistic people have, throughout history, given new perspectives to the world and in various fields that have sort of pushed society as a whole forward. And another strength that I would say is that just from knowing so many people with autism in my life, some of the just kind of petty, insensitive, cold ways of expressing ourselves that some people just learn through life, I've noticed that people with autism are not really so quick to just accept those kind of behaviors from an early age, from watching it happen. I think there's a little bit more skepticism because of this different way that they have of thinking. I notice that especially boys with autism, I believe, are a lot less likely to take on sort of toxic aspects of masculinity, of that nature.
A lot of over-aggressive behaviors that we often see in young males, especially.
Right. You know, obviously we've had some counter-arguments to that, but I would say that that's sort of...
I think Jackson might agree with you a little bit on some of that toxic masculinity stuff. You've seen some really masculine bullying stuff, and you've always tried to be like the calm form of the gentle, strong masculine rather than the bullying kind of toxic masculine.
Yeah, of course. Like you said, intellect and reasoning and problem solving are things that come with autism. And I believe that skills like that tend to be... And, like, people who are more, what's the word, masculine and not like...
You mean kind of like the fraternity guy?
Yeah, like the fraternity guy. There's a difference between masculinity and aggressiveness. Like, masculinity can be used as leadership and can be okay sometimes, but in aggressiveness, it's much worse. And reasoning is very good for, once reasoning and masculinity come together, believe it's a great thing because you can have leadership and very intelligent leadership that can help bring people to new heights, solve problems, and things like that.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that is oftentimes overlooked is the fact that the Centers for Disease Control, or CDC, reports that 46% of children who are on the autism spectrum actually have higher than average intelligence, which is about what you would expect to find in the general population, because 50% by definition have higher than average IQ and 50% have below average IQ. So at 46%, that's not very different from the general population.
And actually, I've read that if you take nonverbal children and you give a testing that's appropriate to a nonverbal child, the rate of higher intelligence in autism spectrum kids is higher, up around the 80s.
I agree with that. I've been in the autism community, and the many nonverbal people, children, adults I know with autism, while they may be impaired socially, they tend to be very intelligent. And if you can type on a computer, they usually say, there's usually profound, and it's nearly insane how intelligent they are. It just comes as a shock that they're well articulated, very good at reason. It's just sad that the social aspect can be so crippling sometimes.
Right. So it's really the social aspect that becomes the greatest hindrance. Other people don't know how to deal with somebody who is on the spectrum. And in all honesty, you know, people who are on the spectrum don't always get the kind of social or facial cues that others might pick up on.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Welcome.
Well, but you know, some of the other things that we typically see is that people who are on the spectrum are able to learn things in detail and remember that information for a long period of time. I have a nephew who's now, actually this week he graduates from college, and you know, he was diagnosed as a young boy as being on the spectrum with Asperger's syndrome, very high intelligence. He started out undergraduate school at Georgia Tech, but wound up switching to another division of Georgia Tech called Southern Tech. And the reason for him doing that was he wasn't comfortable in a large classroom. It wasn't a matter of his ability to handle the academic workload, but he needed an environment that was more conducive and more one-on-one and more comfortable for him than to be in a large lecture classroom. But people who are on the spectrum also tend to have strong visual and auditory skills and to be good visual and auditory learners. Also, we find that people tend to excel in math, science, and music and art.
Yeah. I've definitely met a lot of autistic musicians in my life. Many of them are sort of the classical variety because, as you mentioned, there is a strong propensity for math proficiency among autistic people. And in a way, music kind of is math, and so it's an amazing, you know, creative outlet for.
I think in the rhythm, the order, and the structure, also really appeals to somebody who's on the spectrum,
right?
Because there's a certain logic to it,
yeah,
and a tremendous amount of beauty in the classical music. So,
yes.
Just out of curiosity, what kind of music do you play?
So I am a fan of classical music, but that is not in any way the music that I play. If I can start way back, before I was speaking, I was singing, and it was all the music that I heard on MTV and VH1. So, like, there was a time when I would just sing All Star by Smash Mouth all the time, and I memorized that song completely, and, you know, just that was kind of the start of a really beautiful relationship with pop music. Even the vapid and the artificial, I kind of, you know, found a sort of beauty in all of it. And so the music that I make, it's kind of like wavered in between, you know, indie rock, folk. I've also done a little bit of electronic stuff, you know, recently upon learning music production. But, you know, I would really say that my favorite kind of music to make is just like pop, you know, just synthesizers, major tonalities, and, you know, heavy on melody and, you know, all those things. It's like it's a really intense study of something that seems like, to most people, like not that much work or artistry is put into it. But I like to think that in my practice, I'm, you know, doing the most with it.
Wonderful. And I'm just curious, both of you are in community college at this stage in your lives. What are your favorite courses? What do you enjoy most?
I'd have to say the music classes and any of the art classes, like Christian so elegantly pointed out, I very much do enjoy them. And one of my classes I'm taking this semester is, I believe it's electronic music engineering. I like that. English 1A, which is transfer English. And I've been very good with writing and words. I have a very high vocabulary, I'd like to believe. And I am looking forward to next semester because I can't wait to get more into music. I really find Christian's work inspiring. In fact, seeing him at that one concert, I believed, helped actually get me into music and playing the guitar.
Right. Yeah, so I didn't even realize this until today, but Jadson saw me play at a little venue called Beatnik Bandito in downtown Santa Ana. And it was a Halloween cover show, and I was up there doing a Talking Heads cover set, and it was just me singing over some backing tracks that I had produced. I had recreated six different Talking Heads songs from scratch. Speaking of which, the act of performing music has really sort of helped with my social ability. Because, you know, it's something I'm able to sort of get, like, in a different, you know, sort of personality when I'm performing. And things that I'm too afraid to do or say when I'm just being myself, I'm able to do in a performance aspect. And it's kind of, you know, breaking down those walls to be a more authentic person, I guess.
That sounds amazing. I'm looking forward to hearing some of your music. If you'd like to play something for us now...
Sure.
That would be absolutely amazing. And while you're okay, you're already set.
Yeah, okay, pretty much.
That didn't take long.
If you wanna mic the guitar.
No. Okay. Well, thank you, Christian. And I think we're all ready to hear you. If you're all set.
All right. Yeah. So, this is actually one of the first songs that I ever put out by myself, completely recorded and produced and everything. This was on Thanksgiving of 2012, 4 years ago, and the song is called Palos Verdes. Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, we're almost out of time, so I just want to ask Christina, if you could please explain to us, you know, what's some of the things these two wonderful young men have gone through to get to the point where they are?
Well, these incredible people next to me have benefited tremendously from taking advantage of the services provided by the great state of California and the federal government. The IDEA is a federal act that requires that children get the education that they need. They need special education services, and they have both benefited from that. They have gotten therapy, quite a lot of therapy. They both actually underwent the same behavioral therapy program called ABA for years and years, and they've never known each other till today. But it's so amazing. We have these incredible young men who have benefited from years and years of services and all parents, and we just want you to know that some of these services came from the school district, came from government, came from other sources, and look at us. We have succeeded. They're going to be taxpayers. They're having wonderful lives. Their families are grateful, and this is why we do what we do.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for that. And thank you all three for joining us today. I want to thank our audience for joining us today as well. You've been listening to Laguna Roundtable with co-host Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX 93.5 FM. Our guests this week have been Christina Adams and Jackson Adams and Christian Oyen. So thank you guys for joining us. I'd love to express how much I've enjoyed having you here today and my sincere appreciation for the thoughtful discussion and what it means, and to give hope to so many people, because I think as we've seen here today or talked about here today, identify autism as early as you can, make sure your child gets the attention that they deserve and that they need, and you can actually stun yourself at the level of achievements and the wonderful things that can come out of these terrific human beings. Christina, can you share with us once again your email address so that people can get in touch with you?
I can. Ari, actually, I'm a speaker. I've spoken internationally. I help people from many communities, religions, faiths, circumstances, and I can be reached ChristinaAdamsAuthor.com. I'm the author of a book, A Real Boy, A True Story of Autism Early Intervention and Recovery, and I speak at many locations, and if you have any need, please get in touch with me. I'm also on Twitter at Camel Milk Info. Bye-bye.
Take care, everybody.
Well, the first days are the hardest days. Don't you worry anymore. When life looks like easy street, there is danger at your door. Think this through with me. Let me know your mind. What I want to know is, are you kind? It's a buck dancer's choice, my friends. Better take my advice. You know all the rules by now and the fire from the ice. Will you come with me? Won't you come with me? Whoa, oh, what I want to know. Will you come with me? Goddamn, will I declare? Have you seen the light? Their walls are built of cannonballs. Their motto is, don't tread on me. Come hear Uncle John's band playing to the tide. Come with me or go alone. He's come to take his children home. Same story the crow told me, it's the only one you know. Like the morning sun you come, and like the wind you go. Ain't no time to hate, barely time to wait. Whoa, oh, what I want to know, where does the time go? In a silver mine, and I call it Beggar's Tomb. I got me a violin, and I beg you, call the tune. Anybody's choice, I can hear your voice. Whoa, oh, what I want to know. Uncle John's band by the riverside. Got some things to talk about here beside the rising tide. Come hear Uncle John's band playing to the tide. Come on along or go alone. He's come to take his children home. Thank you.
aside. Got some things to talk about here beside the rising tide. Come hear Uncle John's band playing to the tide. Come on along and go alone. He's come to take his children home.
I ran down to the left. me, but the devil caught me there. He took my $20 bill and it vanished in the air. Stop running, but take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Got two reasons why I cry away each lonely night. The first one's named Sweet Anne-Marie, and she's my heart's delight. Second one is prison baby, the sheriff's on my trail. And if he catches up with me, I'll spend my life in jail. Got a wife in Chino, baby, and one in Cherokee. First one say she got my child, but it don't look like me. Said I'll run, but take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Just might get some sleep tonight.